What the Health with Gabby Allen on FUBAR Radio.
All right, legends, how are you today? I hope you're all doing amazing. And thank you so much for joining me again for the show, What the Health. We have yet another fantastic week exploring the weird and wonderful wellness world. And I tell you what, I've definitely broadened my knowledge since I've worked on this show. And I've interviewed some fascinating people. The saying definitely rings true. You learn something new every day. But I think maybe for me, it's just Tuesdays. So this week is no exception. Later in today's show, we will be chatting to Steph Williams, founder of the WeGlow app and just overall fitness goddess, to be honest. And I'm very excited about this. As I see it everywhere at the moment, I will be talking to Dr. Federica Amati, science communication strategist at Zoe. You know, the Zoe app thing that goes in your arm. Well, yeah. But first up, we will be discussing the viral social media trend where people are trying to regulate their nervous system in order to improve their overall health. Me included, guys. So I'm very excited to be talking right now with Dr. Sula Wingassen. Is that how you say it?
That is.
Yeah. Health psychologist. Welcome to the show, my love.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks so much for coming on. So we've just been having a little natter about all things to do with our nervous system. And as you said, there's so many different, like, you know, approaches. Like, we see loads of things on TikTok, like the never-ending world of TikTok. Mm-hmm. Lots of stuff that is true, as you said, but then lots of stuff that is also a load of drivel.
Yeah.
So is there any scientific evidence behind this trend?
I mean, it really depends what the trend is, right? Because I guess what I see served up all of the time is regulate your nervous system and the science behind the fact that we've got a nervous system, right? But I don't know what people are talking about. Often what they're talking about is regulating one branch of our nervous system, but there's like about 10 branches of our nervous system.
Yeah, because there's like, I don't know the actual words, but there's like empathetic nervous systems. Can you give me like a little breakdown of like what there is?
Yeah, there's the central nervous system, which is basically our brain and our spinal cord. And then there's our peripheral nervous system, which is the nerves throughout our entire body going to different organ systems and like the nerves that we use to feel things. And within the peripheral nervous system, there's then three sub-branches, which is our somatic nervous system, so like how we feel and touch things, our enteric nervous system, which is our gut, and then I forget the other one, which is quite important.
I mean, there's loads there.
Our autonomic nervous system, and okay, that's the one that is, then it's got two branches under that, which is our sympathetic nervous system, which is our fight or flight, and our parasympathetic nervous system, which is our rest and digest.
Okay, so they're the two main ones that people are able to kind of tamper with.
Quite directly, yeah, exactly.
Okay, so how important is your central nervous system to your overall well-being? Does it affect things like your mental health, your physical health, your sleep, all that stuff?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, our nervous system is just how we stay alive, from the very basic functions of going to sleep, waking up, keeping our heart going, but also how it keeps our brain communicating with our body and our body communicating with our brain. So it really dictates everything. But I guess one of my concerns with seeing stuff on social media is because it's so vast and it's so multifaceted.
Well, yeah, you've just said all those different things. God.
And if you've got, I guess the kind of content this appeals to are people that are anxious or people that, you know, are already working with their body, often in very like impressive ways, doing sport regularly or, you know, all these kind of things. And so there can be a tendency to want to try and micromanage everything, like down to specific synapses talking to each other. So I guess that's my one concern, that we're trying to go too macro in our attempt to work with our body. But at the same time, there's lots of things that we can do once we know that there is this underlying kind of network that is keeping mind and body integrated.
So what does a dysregulated central nervous system look like?
So I want to make the distinction between like acute stress. So if I was running late for this show, for example, then my heart would be going. I might, you know,
I'd be like, where is she? She's late.
In a stress, like a sweat, and my tongue might be going dry and my mind's racing. So that's an acute stress response, which is our autonomic nervous system. So that fight or flight stress response, which is the sympathetic nervous system. And me having that physiological response, but also kind of the psychological, that's adaptive, right? That's helping me then get the adrenaline to activate, to find an alternative route to whatever, get in touch with you, what have you. And that's not harmful, it's not bad. We actually want to embrace those experiences as uncomfortable as they can be, which can be really counterintuitive, particularly when it feels like it's getting in the way of you being able to do something as you would like to. You know, we'd like to all turn up to everything calm, but it's not a reality. But then longer term, there's cumulative stress, which is this kind of buildup of that repetitive, acute stress response. But what's interesting is often it's not those acute spikes that you're feeling that are the problematic things. It's often when we're activated that the sympathetic nervous system response is on the go, but we're not necessarily aware of it. So it's kind of like those moments where you're scrolling instead of turning towards something difficult, when you're you know, keeping yourself busy because you don't want to think about, you know, a challenging relationship, or, you know, you just keep...
I feel seen, guys.
those are the things where our autonomic nervous system is activated, probably, you know, more than it needs to be, and we're not getting the adequate... opportunity
like management
to balance out. Yeah.
So, okay. So before, just for a bit of context, guys, we actually just spoke about this just before the show. We should have saved it. But so I've been doing a bit of reading about this stuff because I'm trying to regulate my central freaking nervous system. But so that's actually interesting that you said that, because I'm trying to, instead of when I feel a sense of panic or anxiety or whatever, rather than trying to tackle it and be like, what can I do right now to just like fix it, and, you know, I'm trying to sit in it and like control it. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, there's, I've read somewhere or heard somewhere that you should, like, feelings aren't infinite. Like, they're never going to last forever. Right. You should just like be able to, you know, kind of get through it, manage it in the moment, because it will pass you by. Is that kind of what you're looking at?
Yeah. But how have you been finding that?
Hard.
Because it's so hard. Because what I describe to people is there's like a intensity scale, right? So you can, let's say feeling anxious, you can feel anxious from 0 all the way up to 100. If I'm feeling anxious 40%, maybe then I'm able to sit with feeling anxious 40%, and I can watch it and not get too tangled up in it, not let my brain spiral too much, and then it starts to reduce. But if I'm feeling anxious like 80-90%, that's going to be pretty impossible.
Yeah, so it's all consuming, right?
Exactly.
So what would you recommend for that?
So the beauty of this is there's so many different ways that we can work with our nervous system, tailoring it to like where we are on that scale. So, you know, to begin with, like you're doing, acknowledging how you're feeling is number one. We know that that automatically helps our brain to regulate the emotion a little bit just by labeling. And then we can turn towards the feeling, but there's so many different ways we can do that. We can do that just by trying to observe, which I think for many people is the most tricky, because our thoughts are just so there and ready to analyze, narrate, tell us what we need to do.
Yeah.
And then you can get into a bit of a battle, can't you, where you're like, oh, so I need to do this. And then you're feeling something else different.
Yeah.
And then you go back and and then you just are frustrated with the whole thing. So instead of doing that, and this is going to sound really basic, and again, lots of information about this everywhere now, is using the breath. So what people don't necessarily know is our autonomic nervous system is kind of... influences and is inextricably linked with our breathing. So when we breathe in, that's associated with our sympathetic nervous system, so the fight or flight. When we breathe out, it's associated with the parasympathetic nervous system, the rest and digest.
Oh, wow.
So when we're anxious, we have more rapid, shallow breathing,
yeah,
which is associated with that fight or flight response. So just by trying to slow down the breath and extend the exhales out, we're starting to physiologically rebalance that parasympathetic nervous system to establish just a little more balance. We're not saying the emotions go away, but the physiology,
yeah,
calms down a little bit.
I think also because when you're focusing on breath work, you kind of can't focus on anything else. You know,
right,
if you're breathing in for 4, holding for 6 and out for 7.
Yeah.
That's one that I've been doing
yes,
recently.
It's a good one.
Yeah. And like, so would you say that breath work is probably one of the best things you can do to regulate your nervous system?
I think breath work is a really solid foundation to start, because not only is it working directly with those two branches, as you say, it's also helping you get into the habit of moving your attentional focus away from the spiraling thoughts, which is, you know, the ways that we get tangled in the weeds of what's going on, and moving back to the body, which then connects you to what's actually going on for you. And also, we feel emotions in the body, so we're closer to what we're feeling and more able to acknowledge our reality. And from being able to do that, you know, there's multiple skills and physiological changes happening, then we can kind of build up other things from there.
So, you know, you say that you feel it in the body. It is actually crazy. I know that we everything's connected, right? But, you know, say when you are going through a breakup or something, your appetite might go, or your appetite might increase, or, you know, you can't sleep and your heart goes and things like that. It's crazy how, like, all those little branches of the nervous systems are all working together to just ruin your life, basically.
Ruin your life, but once you start...
Keep you alive, though.
Keep you alive. But also, once you start to recognise that, and I think that's the beautiful thing about, like, this conversation and the more awareness that there is now, we can start to, like, I guess, cultivate more of a loving relationship with our body. Mm. You know, it's kind of feeding back to us how we're feeling, and our intuitive response is like, oh, that feels horrible, stop it.
Yeah.
But if we're like, okay, this is what's happening, let me see if I can nurture myself physically, you know, then our nervous system can kind of pay us back, and it's a bit of a friendship that you're building.
So aside from breath work, what can you recommend to anyone asking for a friend?
So I think breath work's a really good solid foundation. The second thing, like I was alluding to there, is for some people, knowing that your emotions are in your body is actually quite an alien concept. They're like, no, it's a mental thing. And that's usually because when we're talking about our emotions, we're talking about them, we're thinking about them. It's like a thought as opposed to a feeling. So if you can start to learn, when you feel a particular emotion, where does that feel in your body? You know, if you feel a strong sense of sadness, do you feel that in your throat, for example? Do you feel it in your chest? When you feel anxious, like, what's happening in your body? And again, it can feel quite uncomfortable to start noticing this, but over time, coupled with things like breath work, you develop this familiarity that allows you to open up choices for how you're feeling. Because I think our default is to try and escape discomfort.
Yeah.
So if we're feeling a little bit, even just bored, it might not be an intense emotion, we're like, okay, let me get my phone out, and our brain's gone there.
Yeah.
But if we're like, okay, I'm feeling, you know, kind of agitated or antsy, then by noticing that, you can perhaps pick a choice that's going to be more replenishing overall.
Yeah. And I think that, like, is, I mean, it's very apt to feel more present in your body, basically, what I said before, like, just feel it and then, like, manage it from there, right? What would you, on the other side of things then, so rather than the big things, you know, the little stresses that you said about, like, being late, things like that, you say that, I mean, they happen to all of us every day. I mean, I was actually early today for once in my life. But those everyday stresses, how can they affect your well-being? Do you think if people just have those, their central nervous system is, like, fine? Or do you think that there's a way of managing those that they don't affect, basically, so they don't build up to ruin your life?
I think about it as layers. So the first layer, having those mini stresses, pretty much our body is, like, made to just accommodate that and come back to an equilibrium. But it's when they start to fester and then build up and accumulate, that's when they cause us difficulties. And usually that's not because of the stressor itself, because I think I like to clarify that we can think about stress in three different ways. One is, like, the external stressors that happen, you know, so the bus passes us by, that's something that we've got no control over, or our landlord's going to kick us out, or, you know, whatever the stresses in life. That's one definition of stress, something that happens to us. Then there's the definition of stress, which is, you know, that physiological and or psychological experience that we have to what's going on. And then there's stress as in I'm stressing out. So it's, you know, our response to stress. And we don't have massive influence over the first two. We can to some degree, you know. But often what I see, again, in kind of social media arenas is cut out stress, you know, avoid stress, which is stressful in itself because we can't do it. Then we're like, oh God, that's another thing that stressed me out. And then what that does is it creates another layer of feeling stressed about stress.
Yeah.
And that's not productive. So what we can do is really notice the secondary layers getting added. So if I'm late and I feel, you know, understandably stressed about that, but then I have the layers that add on to that as, oh, you know, she's going to think terribly of me. I've missed, you know, a terrible blah, blah, blah. And then that creates another
spirals.
Layer.
Spirals.
Exactly. Yeah. Those are the layers we can work with to then kind of re-regulate the primary layer, because otherwise it just keeps expanding.
Right. Thank you so much for coming on today. That was so insightful for myself, for sure, selfishly. And I'm sure everybody else loved it too. Thank you so much, Sula. I hope to see you again very soon.
Yeah, thank you, Gabby.
Thanks for coming on. Amazing. Well, I'm definitely going to be regulating my stress levels this week. So I want to talk to you about my exercise of the week, right? I said to my friend this morning, what's your favourite exercise? And she was like, surprisingly, she went, bench press. I was like, when was the last time you bench pressed, mate? And she's like, no, I know I haven't done it for ages. But when I do it and I'm able to like add weight to it, it makes me just feel like a badass. Like, and it's true, right? You know, you see all these men doing chest press in the gym and you think, obviously, it's the same as us doing hip thrusts as well. I'm not speaking for all women, but most women that I know. But, you know, when you do get good at something, she's like, yeah, I'm like all you henchmen doing this. But admittedly, I don't do chest because, you know, you've seen my wonky boobs probably on social media. And I did that from overtraining. So I do avoid most chest exercises. However, you can do it safely with a boob job, by the way. But I just choose not to do it. I do press ups and I do other exercises that do target my chest, but just not predominantly bench press. However, I do program it for my shape up clients through a bench press with a dumbbell or barbell, as it's a great exercise for building the upper body strength, mainly in the chest, front delts and arms. And I like to program it with supersetting it with back, so it's like a full upper body session, as it's great for improving posture. And of course, the stronger your upper body is, the more weight you can hold for your lower body. I'll see you after the break.
Follow us at What The Health Show for more from Gabby. This is What The Health.
Hey!
FUBAR Radio presents.
Access all areas.
Mark from Married at First Sight UK.
See, at the wedding, you told Sean you were 26, but you're actually 36.
Oh, yeah.
So drop in that decade. We ain't gone 1 or 2 years either side. What was going through your head when you thought, I'm going to shave off 10 years.
A 26. Third of your life.
Yeah.
It was instant reaction. As soon as anyone says to me, how old are you? I'm like 26. I just stopped counting after 26. Would I have told him? Probably not.
No. Ever?
Well, maybe when we're 80 years old and we've got the grandkids running round.
Except like, you wouldn't be 80 years old. You'd be 90.
Yeah, you'd be 90. I'd be 26 still. I'd be going around the corner for some more injections.
Joining me now, the former leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, MP. And there you are stood with hundreds of thousands of people at Glastonbury singing, "Oh, Jeremy Corbyn." What is that like?
It was quite extraordinary. It was an amazing experience and I was very pleased we did it. We wrote, the office got very excited about Glastonbury. Every single person in the office thought it was necessary for them to be at Glastonbury.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. Yeah.
Every single one said it's really necessary for them to come.
The Dating Show.
I'm friends with a fair few exes and I think you can be friends with an ex, but I genuinely do. But I do think that it's timing is everything with that.
I think it depends what you cast as a friend.
Yeah,
are you talking about, you know, someone you're going to hang out with on your sofa? Like, if you've already shagged, you know, isn't that a bit weird?
I think that's a different level of friend. I think that's a different level of friend. You can be friends with someone, you can't be, like, best fucking friends with someone. I mean, I've got exes that I talk to about their current partners and whatever else, and they'll tell me about that sort of stuff. But I wouldn't say, oh, do you want to come over for fucking Chinese and chill on the sofa?
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio. FUBAR Radio.
And we are back. Hello, hello. Are you back with us? You better have been, because I have this stunning Steph Williams with me now, founder of the We Glow app. Hello, my girl.
Hello.
How are you?
Good, good. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for coming in. So, I want to ask you some quick fire questions so the audience can get to know you very quickly. Because I followed you for years.
Yes.
But just in case they don't.
Okay, yeah.
So, three words to describe yourself.
Oh, scatty.
Yeah, love it.
Driven. And sporty.
Yep.
There we go.
Perfect. Workout in the morning or evening?
Morning.
Yes, same. Yeah. Upper or lower body day?
Lower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who would be your dream workout partner?
Oh, The Rock.
The Rock.
That's the first person that came to my head.
I mean, he's because you just head.
It would be quite fun.
Yeah. And what is your favourite workout anthem?
Oh, favourite workout anthem. I love Brent Fayez.
Yeah.
I always listen to him when I'm working out.
Really? I feel like he's not like...
He's not like boom. No, but it's kind of like gets you in your feels.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah.
Also, scatty. I would never have thought you were scatty.
Yeah, well, to be honest with you...
Because I'm so scatty.
No, I am.
But I look at you and I feel like she's so together.
Oh, no. This is the misconception.
Okay.
Yeah. You just...
That makes me feel
like
better
I've
about my life.
Shit together, but none of us do. Sorry.
Okay, good. Same. Okay, so let's talk about your on-off relationship with exercise.
Yes.
Tell us more about this.
So, on-off relationship with exercise. So, I guess I have always worked out since I was a child. So, I used to play hockey and sport.
Yes.
Like, all my life. And then I was diagnosed with endometriosis.
I did not know that.
No. So, yeah. So, I have endometriosis and fibroids. Which I've had two operations to be removed.
Shit.
So yeah, I was diagnosed with endometriosis like 2017, and I've always been super...
Maybe I didn't know this. So
always been like super sporty, kind of took a rest from it, really missed it. Like my mental health took a massive dip as well. And then actually, yeah, I got diagnosed with endometriosis because I had like severe tiredness, all the symptoms that come with endo. And then it basically meant that, yeah, I was super tired and I wasn't able to work out to the capacity that I thought I was capable of. Mm. So I kind of switched up my workout routine quite a lot, going from, because I think when you first enter the fitness space, it's kind of very much weights and that's what you see and that's what you know and that's what I've trained as. Mm. But actually I started incorporating a lot more low impact Pilates walks. And
yeah,
actually,
I've seen, because you've got a Pilates trainer on your app now, right?
So I'm a Pilates, I qualified as a Pilates instructor as well. Yeah, which was something, trying to juggle businesses and then learn something new again.
Yeah.
Was definitely a challenge.
But you did it.
But we did it. Yeah. And I think it's really important to be able to like learn new things.
100%. I've wanted to do Pilates training for years. Yeah. But every time I go to look at it, it's like this big long course. And I'm like, I can't even get anything done these days, let alone add something else in. So good for you.
Yeah, no, it was. And I'm so glad I did it because I love it. And the combination of weights and Pilates together and how it just kind of, they yeah. marry so well. It's genuinely been such a game changer for me with my workout routine.
Mm. Has that helped your endo then?
Yeah, massively. I think when I was just doing heavy strength, mm. I was getting so tired. And also I was like, what am I lifting this weight for?
Yeah.
Like, why am I doing this?
Yeah, well, who are you trying to prove it to?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I was like, let's reassess, like, why do I love to work out? What's it about? And it's to like make myself feel the
good.
Best.
Yeah. You know what? I actually had a moment. I did turf games on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
And it was horrible. It was horrible. But it was so fun. But it was like savage, right? Yeah. But I wasn't the best in the room. And I hate that. And I was like, oh, God, I haven't trained like well enough for this. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, I don't normally think I am. But then when I was there, I was like, this is so annoying. Because I was good at like some stuff, but then not very good at other things. Anyway. And then I was like, why do I actually need to be good at this, though? Yeah. Like, can I not just do it for fun? And then I was like saying, my new ethos, guys, is aesthetics over strength. I just want to look good.
No.
I was like, that's what I did. But I was saying, like, saying this, trying to like cover my back. I was like, you know, that's why I'm shit.
Yeah.
But
also, it's like when I've done like classes and stuff before, and the blokes were always like, lift that heavier weight. And I'm like, no, like, I'm good.
Yeah.
I don't need to lift the heavier weight. Like, I know what I'm capable of. I know what works for my body.
Yeah.
And I think it's just kind of, like, I know what makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And ultimately, if you're working out to feel good, you're going to look good.
And also, I think with social media as well, like, when you see, like, I follow people and, like, these girls are, like, squatting crazy numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
So then it makes me feel like I should be doing that
as
well.
I know.
Do you feel that too?
Do I feel that too?
Like impacted by what you see on social media?
Yeah, I think everyone's like impacted to an extent, but I try not to let it swamp me, and I think I just try not to scroll and see it. But yeah, I think when you see these girls, I'm all like, power to you.
Yeah.
Because
I mean, you're an OG fitness influencer though. I've, like I said, followed you for years. So I think maybe you've kind of just got used to it and you get to take yourself away from it.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case. I think as you get older, priority shift and things like that as well. But yeah, I mean, incredible. But I just know with what I'm like, and I think as well with running businesses, I don't want to feel tired. And I think the like Pilates gives you energy, whereas sometimes strength training can feel like you need to nap.
I mean, I nap every day.
But you know. Whatever.
So tell me about your businesses then. I know that you've got Weeglow.
Yes.
And you've got Seffi.
Yes.
Is that how you say it?
Yeah,
is perfect. That from Steffi?
No, actually, it wasn't, but now it kind of, like, makes sense. No, basically researched high-end brands and brands that do really well, and it tends to be, like, Nike, Puma, obviously.
Just, like, one
word. One word, four letters. Mm. S, I love the way it looked. We, like, looked up words for, like, sophisticated, da-da-da-da, and then we just landed on Seffi, and I was like, oh, my gosh, it just...
It's lovely. So for anyone that doesn't know, Seffi is a activewear brand.
Yes.
But I feel like it's not just activewear. It's, like... saucy activewear.
Saucy, yeah.
It's just everyone looks good in it, basically.
Yes,
so what made you want to do it, and what made you want to make it different to others that you on the market?
So I've grown up playing like sports, as I said, like my whole life, and having to wear like loads of different activewear the whole time. And I always had such a thing with my thighs. I got like teased and bullied.
You've got the best thighs in the world.
Thank you. But yeah, growing up, I still have this thing in my head of like, oh, my thighs, because I think conditioned from when you're younger.
From back in the day.
Complex, yeah. Exactly. And so I never wore shorts, never ever. And I never wanted to get my legs out. And so, and when I did wear shorts, they dug in, they felt uncomfortable. And so I was like, there's a gap in the market here, which I wanted to tap into,
yeah.
To create activewear that actually flatters you, is comfortable, but also wasn't like overly like contoured or anything like that, so that I felt like I could wear it then in my everyday and feel and look put together. So yeah, that's
athleisure,
exactly. So that's kind of how it was born. And then yeah, you've got to have
and
a bit of sauce in there as well.
Yeah, you definitely need the sauce. Yeah. I love the high-waisted bodysuits that you originally came out with.
Yeah, the low
See,
back.
I've got complex because I don't have a waist. So, like, I'm, like, straight up and straight down. So I put one of them on and I look like, I'm, like, Borat.
No, that's actually... hey, Borat, you know.
I mean, it's sexy
vibe.
Borat.
It's a vibe.
Borat
yeah,
with blonde hair. So tell me then more about this hockey world that you... So you played for... Who did you play for?
Wales.
Wales?
Yeah.
In the international Welsh international team. How was the pressure of that, like, playing for them?
Do you know what? So I... Because I'm a bit scatty, I think a lot of the time I just don't... Like, I don't overthink it until I'm there because I am a bit of an overthinker. So I think until I'm kind of, I just try and block out the noise and just turn up as if it's anything else. And I guess when I was younger, I was training like every single weekend, probably from the age of like 14 to 19, like most days at school. So it was just kind of was what it was.
Are you one of those people like me that you like, everything's done last minute because you know that you can do it last minute. It's just better to just think about it then.
Yeah. I'm like, I'll think about it when I really have to. And then I'm like, go.
If anyone, like my manager's here, my business like partner might be listening and he'd be like, can you not do that? Can you just be more on it, please? Yeah, and like, no, this is how I work.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I know how I'm programmed. Edit it is what it is.
Literally. So you've been on the scene for so long now. You've got 2 million followers, is it, on Insta? Wowzers. Do you... So you say that you're not pressurized by seeing other people, you know, work out and like lift. But do you feel ever pressured by seeing what other people are doing? You know, you've got two businesses.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, I feel like I'm always chasing my tail. I'm like, I want to be doing more.
Yeah, I think there's always more to be doing. I think especially with like content creating and stuff as well. It's like there's always, the sun comes out and you're like, oh, I need to use the good light. Oh my God. And everything. Yeah, I think as women, we definitely feel pressure regardless of social media. And I think it definitely does add that little extra layer of pressure and comparison. But I think I've been doing it for a while. And there's always going to be moments where I'm like, what I'm doing isn't good enough, but I put enough pressure on myself.
Yeah.
And I think it's from not even having to look at what other people are doing. I think I, as a person, I'm like, I need to be, this is what I should be doing.
Yeah.
And like looking forward.
That's
and,
good. You've kind of found a process that works for you.
Yeah. And I think having people around you, like good people around you who support what you're doing, support your goals and keep you grounded.
And because you've got, you're married and everything, aren't you?
I am.
Amazing.
Yeah. Alex.
Hi, Alex.
Hi, Alex, if you're listening. He's definitely not.
So speaking of which then, talking about it being hard for us fitness influencers. I mean, we have a hard life, don't we? No, I'm joking, guys. But according to a recent study, fans of fitness influencers tend to be healthier, but also more depressed. Do you think influencers have a responsibility to be as transparent as possible with their fans? Because as I just said to you, I would never know that you were scatty. And like your followers might not even know you're scatty. Yeah. But like, what do they want from you? Do they want you to be like, guys,
well,
I am scatty.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if you follow my YouTube, I think you can probably see the...
Okay.
There's like a different
right, fine.
Side and like sometimes on my stories and stuff. But yeah, I think sometimes it's difficult to capture the real you in essence sometimes because you're busy and you're amongst it and you're doing it. And so, you know, just quick take a picture of me like, it's difficult to share that. But that's really sad that people say that people follow influencers.
They're healthier, but more depressed. I think it's because like, they obviously you know, follow people like me and you and can take good stuff from it, but then the comparison.
Yeah, you know. And I think something to help that is to, I think, focus less on what that person is and trying to be like them, because I spent so many years when I was younger trying to change myself. Mm. And then I was like, I am me. I'm going to do what feels good for me in terms of exercise and stuff and take inspiration from people rather than trying to be someone like we've just said. We're like, oh, you're small. We're small girls.
Yeah.
Like, I always looked at girls with like really long legs and I was like, oh.
I know. I'm like, know? Why like, am I so short?
Why are you trying to chase something that's just
be the best version, or try and be the best version of yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that looks different every day. And
also, you know when you see people do a day in the life?
Yes.
Like, so my day in the life's, honestly, if I'm doing like a shot in my kitchen, I have to clean up the kitchen, put everything, all the shit that's in the kitchen in the living room.
Yeah.
And then once I've done that part, I have to put all the shit that's in the living room back in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And I'm like, guys, this is not a day in life. I should do that as the day in the life.
I know, literally. Getting all of that. I know.
That's what actually
makes a video or anything. It's like all like clean. And then underneath it is just like the massive, like, I'm like, where is this? What am I doing?
Honestly, I'm like, you know, it's stuff that you see on Instagram. I'm like, you have to really look like that.
Yeah.
Like,
does your life take it with a pinch of salt, I think, because it is created to, you know, take inspiration or things like that.
Exactly.
So you have to see it as it is. But yeah, I think TikTok's quite a good space for more chill vibe as well.
Yeah, it is. I don't even think I've got it on this. I've got a new phone, so I didn't download it. I just can't get with it. I've tried. I've posted a few videos when I got my boobs done and they did really well, but then I just can't. It's another thing to do.
It is.
Right, so I want to talk to you about these jabs, because I was talking to my mum about them the other day and she said that she wants to do them. You know, the Ozempic jabs? So we're talking about like feeling body confident, things like that. There's these Ozempic, is that how you say it?
Yeah.
They're basically weight loss jabs.
Yeah.
What do you think about those?
Well, I just think it's another trend, isn't it? It's like when I grew up, it was all about the like thigh gap. And that was so toxic. And all we saw were, you know, stick thin, tall girls. That's all I saw. And which is why I think social media has a big positive now, because you can see so many different body types, which I think is lovely, because it's like what you can relate to. But it's just another trend. We don't know what the
outcome is going to be.
Effects are going to be of it. And it's just sad. It's just another thing that, like, we're trying to shrink yourself. Women are shouldn't, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you're being very nice and diplomatic about it. Mm. I think it's stupid, because I'm just
this is that kind of podcast.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just like,
it is.
You know, come on. Like, well, this is how I said it to my mum, because she wants to go on these pens. And I was like, listen, mum, can you just go on a diet and exercise?
And also,
I know obviously it's not the same for everybody.
Yeah.
But, you know, people do have things. I'm not that brutal and that much of a bitch. But when it comes to like just not wanting to do all this stuff that you can actually do.
And what exercise and the nutrition gives you is amazing, because of the discipline, the motivation, the endorphins. Mm. It makes you feel so good. If you're not happy and you're trying to then find, if you think being a smaller version of you is going to make you happy, you're still not really dealing with the underlying...
Your misery.
Your misery. it is stupid. It's just another trend, and it's just something that's probably going to be damaging further down the line. You know, it's like getting your bum done, and then it's getting your bum removed, and then it's getting this done and that done.
Yeah,
and it's
exactly.
Kind of like, when does it all stop?
Although I did get my boobs done and they made me really happy.
Yeah, so if it makes you happy.
Yeah.
Like,
there you go. My misery is disappeared.
Yeah, so there we go. Done. But yeah, no, I mean, I think it's... But yeah, it is frustrating, because I think with these trends, you can get into your head, you're like, oh God, should I be more of this? Or,
but also with those pens, you apparently it all comes down to nutrition at the end of the day anyway. So at the end of that, like once you've done the pens and once you've lost all the weight, if you don't...
See, I thought it was a pill.
No, it's like a full-on jab.
Right, because when you said jab, I was like, jab?
It's
I thought we were talking about boxing.
No,
I was like,
sorry.
Gabby,
no. It's for... diabetes. People with diabetes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like that. I thought it was.
But yeah, so if you lose all the weight, but then you continue to eat how you did before, you're just going to put it back on and probably more.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, in like, I assume you have a community for WeGlow.
Yes.
Do you like talk to them about your body positivity, like journey and things like that? How do you kind of, you know, talk about this stuff with them?
Yeah, so on the app, I share all like my workouts, live workouts. We have like loads of variety of, we have yoga, meditation, things like that. But I think that safe space for me with that community is probably more on my YouTube or like stories. I would say that's kind of the space where we talk about body positivity. Mm-hmm. But there's a fine like line of body positivity and like what I see on social media. I think it can be kind of a little bit toxic sometimes. Mm.
Where people do like the before and after photos.
Yeah, before and after. I think it's, yeah. Or like, you know, it can be amazing. And if it makes someone feel great, that's perfect. But, you know, like if I'm, for example, like going to crunch my body up and then be like, this is me now. And then this is me after. And things like that. It's kind of like, well, I don't know, see how that's necessarily going to help people. So I think there's just a way of going about it. And I think working out to make yourself feel good is kind of what I try and
100%.
Push, because that's also ultimately what's going to keep someone like consistent. And
exactly. Because then, you know, if you do work out to feel good, you're going to go back and do more of it. And then the other stuff is just benefits, right? If you want to lose a bit of weight or grow your bum or something.
But also DMs.
Yeah.
I voice note quite a bit because I'm also really dyslexic. So
I'm a voice noter too.
Are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, like literally podcast via voice note. DMs with them and everything like that. But I feel like very lucky with the community, Touchwood. It's a safe space and everyone's pretty positive. And maybe it's because I've been doing it for a while. So.
Yeah, but that's amazing. And I think you've obviously learned so much on your journey from, you know, in your own, with your complexes and overcoming them, things like that, and actually using them to make a bloody brand about it. You know what I mean? You know, that's amazing. And I think that's really inspiring for other people to see that if they know this journey now.
Yeah.
What would you say to anyone starting their fitness journey?
Starting a fitness journey, I think just to go back on finding things that you enjoy. Also, actually, I think understanding the intensity of how you should be working out.
Mm.
Because a lot of the time, girls were like, oh, I've done a workout, it's so boring. I like don't like it, I don't get results, done. But, you know, in the gym, they're just kind of not really understanding.
Flapping around.
But that's not anyone's fault, because they haven't seen what the intensity should be like.
Yeah.
So I think actually understanding how hard you can work, because once you kind of hit that intensity, the endorphins and everything, it feels really good, and then you want to kind of do more of it.
Yeah.
I think just be... find something that
you enjoy
which is going to keep you consistent. If you can find like-minded people, I think that's something that I'm now also like for myself, like trying to find like women in their 30s who are like-minded and who you can like go together and things like that. I think was definitely what would help.
Yeah, I love that.
Someone's fitness journey.
Yeah, and like just, you know, following someone like doing it, I think that always helps. Like seeing, as you said,
like when you do your, you know, I love watching your retreat things that you do and like your workout videos. It's like the vibe and you can see how hard someone's actually working.
Yeah.
And energy, feeling off someone's energy. If you hate it, classes, anything like that, I think is...
it's a good place to start.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you can feed off. It always helps when someone's like shouting over you, right? Going, do more.
Go more.
Like me. How much do you want it? That's what I always say. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
So
it's been amazing having you on. You're beautiful and you are amazing at what you do. So everyone go and have a little look at Steph Williams on Instagram.
Yeah. Steph it. OG.
Steph it. Okay.
Yeah, whatever.
Thanks for coming on, babes.
Thank you.
It's been lovely chatting. So coming up after this, I'll be joined by Dr. Federica Amati, gorgeous name, science communication strategist at Zoe. I'll see you then.
Keeping fitness fun. What the Health with Gabby Allen.
FUBAR Radio presents
What the Health with Gabby Allen.
Joining me now is Millie Gooch, author and founder of Sober Girl Sobriety Society. I need to know what is so bad about dating sober.
I think it's just terrifying when it's something that you're not used to, because when I was drinking and dating, you know, like you use it to calm your nerves, you use it for confidence, you rely on it. And I think that's the one thing I realised when I stopped drinking is how much I really relied on alcohol. I was always kind of saying, you know, like, oh, I'm not dependent on it, but for my confidence I was really. But I also think there's so many benefits to it. Like I used to go on so many dates when I was drinking, I'd be like, they are the one, and then I'd meet them like a few weeks later sober and I'd be like, we've got nothing in common, what was going through my mind? I'd be like, oh, it was because I was drunk.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
Harpreet, how are you, my love? I'm great, thank you. How are you? It looks fun in there.
I want to talk about this because obviously you met your partner on The Apprentice. When did you start to get that feeling, I'm into him and this is more than just a banter or a friendship? Because it's a close environment being on a show like that, isn't it?
I really wish I could sit here and give loads of juicy gossip that actually we used to secretly meet in the laundry room on the show, but we didn't. And when I actually last spoke with yourselves, I think it was right after I'd won, we weren't even flirting, never mind dating. First time that I thought I actually fancied him was when I watched him on TV and I watched episode one.
How funny.
I was like, hang on. You know, he's actually really good looking.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani.
And joining me in the studio, we have Deputy Leader of the Green Party, Zach Polanski. Zach, thank you so much for joining us. How are you keeping, Zach?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. How are you?
So you're hoping for four MPs in the general. You think that's going to happen?
Yeah, that's absolutely the minimum at what we're
I don't want to be Piers Morgan here, but will you take a... I don't have £1,000, but you take a £100 bet with me that you'll get four MPs.
Well, I do everything in politics to talk about the harms of gambling. So for me to very place a bet on there would be pretty, you know, pretty horrendous.
Before we had you on, we discussed with the producers as to whether I should do the bet joke. And I said I would because I had every faith that you would answer it in the way I expect a politician of any moral
standing. We should also talk about cryptocurrency, which also is very problematic.
Rishi, if you're listening, mate, that's how you answer a betting question.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Hello, and we are back. And joining me now, I'm so excited for this chat. So I'm joined by Dr. Federica Amati. She's Italian, everybody. She's the head nutritionist at Zoe. Thank you for coming in today.
Thanks for having me. It's so nice to be here.
I know, and you're dressed for the summer weather.
Try my best.
Yeah, we're going to try and keep it here. Basically, everyone needs to dress like it's going to be summer forever and then the sun will stay. So, can you talk us through the famous Zoe app and how it works?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Zoe works by sending out a test kit, which contains like a really fun few elements to get you started. And so, there's this specific test meal that was created clinically, which is like a metabolic challenge. They're these cookies that are high in fat, high in sugar, but actually they reflect like a standard Western meal. So the same kind of amount of calories and fat and sugar. Okay. And you basically eat these cookies at specific times and you wear a continuous glucose monitor. And then you also collect blood using this little thing called a tasso, which basically extracts blood from your arm, which looks at your blood fats. And then the last piece of the puzzle is the gut microbiome test. So you basically put a little hammock in your toilet, collect some poop, take a little scoop, pop it in the post. It's actually super easy to do. And people are much more up for that nowadays. So you have this like test kit that arrives, but you also have this amazing app. And the Zoe app in the testing phase really teaches you about what we're doing, why we're doing it, takes you through the studies that informed the actual approach we have. But also it delivers nutrition education whilst you're waiting for your results.
Right.
And then once we like go through all your data, we also take some health history, family history, and we ask you about your diet. We take all of this data into account and we create personalized food scores that are designed to help you support your health. So based on your test results and the information we have from you.
Right.
And that's delivered to you through your app. So if you can imagine, this morning you wake up and you're like, I'm not really sure what I want for breakfast, or I want to try something different, you know, something new. You can open your app and it will have breakfast recommendations just for you. Mm-hmm. And it will also have lists of foods that you can open up and see, okay, what should I have today for like my fruit or my vegetables? And it will give you like a list which is scored according to your results. And of course, I think on top of that, it's also like an app that delivers in terms of whether you want to find out some new recipes, but also, as I said, education, podcasts, extra information about lots of different health topics, like how sleep impacts your metabolism, or whether we need to worry about like what sort of time we're having our last meal. So lots of information about health, which is evidence-based.
Okay. So how accurate is it?
How accurate is it? Yeah. I love that. Okay. Well, we have done a randomized controlled trial to test our product. So we were like, we've done the science to set it up, and we're a science first company. So over 2 years ago, we registered this clinical trial, this control trial, RCT. And we were like, let's see if Zoe actually works to improve the health of the people. Yeah. Right? And so in this RCT, we compared Zoe, the entire approach, to standard care, which is basically, here's how you eat healthily, you know, government guidelines, like here's how you have a healthy diet. But we also provided all participants with access to nutritionists. And we had little reminders like every week, you know, are you able to stick to the plan? Like, how's it going? And actually, that by the end of the intervention, so by the end of the randomized controlled trial, the Zoe participants did better. So like by a statistically significant, clinically meaningful amount, right? So so it was really, really good. It was a big gamble for us to do it. But as a science first company, we wanted to put ourselves out there and see, like, is what
we're
doing
good enough?
Imagine if
it came back the other way around.
Well, we would have still had to publish it, right? So that's the thing. But luckily it didn't. So what we are able to deliver, like the way that we deliver the information, the way that we do the testing, the way that we give people advice, truly works to improve health outcomes. Mm-hmm. And here we're talking about metabolic health. We're talking about improving things like waist circumference if it's too high, losing weight if it's needed. But the population we tested it in was like an average adult population, which unfortunately, as you'll know, Gabby, like people, the average adult in the UK and the US isn't very healthy metabolically. So it helped move all these markers that are important for health. But also we asked people, how do you feel? Like, how's your hunger? How's your sleep? How's your energy? And those are the results that I love.
Yeah.
Because
they're getting the other benefits. Yeah.
Yeah. The participants who did Zoe felt better. They were less hungry. They were losing weight, losing inches off their waist, and less hungry. They had more energy.
And that's by using the recipes on the Zoe app?
Yeah. Just by following the advice in the Zoe app, the recipes, but also like basically when you add food into the app, it gives you a score for that meal. So it's all about creating meals that are good for you, not individual foods. There's no such thing as a superfood. There's no sort of one thing that you need to eat. So it's like, how can you build meals that are actually supporting your health?
Yeah.
And you get this daily score over out of 100, and then a weekly score and a monthly score. And so the idea is that you see, like, how often, how much are you able to eat foods that are really good for you? And we want to get to like an 80-20, where 80% of the time you're really supporting your health, and then 20% of the time, you know, you're late, you're eating whatever you want.
It's not possible. It's,
obviously, there's got to be flexibility.
That's what I was going to ask you. So I actually have a few friends that have done the Zoe app. Cool. And when they were doing it, they just became completely obsessed. Yeah. And I think, you know, when you are looking at statistics in front of you, you know, we've all done it. Like, even just using other food apps, you know, like MyFitnessPal or things like that, you end up getting so obsessed with it. But it's not sustainable long term, you know? So, like, do you think apps that offer personalized nutrition are causing people to excessively worry about that side of things?
Yeah, I think so. There's a real balance to strike. I think that the majority of us don't have enough of an insight on what's actually happening or how useful it can be and how much actually every food choice you'd make is contributing to your health.
Yeah.
There are, of course, a proportion of people in the population who are more anxious or who are more prone to disordered eating, for example. And it's super important that if you are in that group, you don't engage with any of these tracking apps. So it's not just Zoe, but it's the same with MyFitnessPal. It's the same with Noom. There's many, many, many apps. And I think if tracking isn't good for you, then best not to engage with it. But the vast majority of the population, the vast majority of our members, honestly, are just blown away by the insight. They're like, oh my gosh, I did not know that.
Yeah, so it's more about the education purpose rather than trying to get people to be obsessed with eating a certain amount of calories and things like that.
So there's no calorie counting.
Oh,
there's
amazing.
No portion control. So the thing about Zoe, which is so different, is that it's all about food quality and improving your dietary quality.
So, sorry, how do they... I'm just interested. Yeah, yeah. So if you are given a recipe then, are you given measurements of the foods that you're meant to be eating?
So you're given a recipe to create the recipe, and that can be, some of them are for two people, some of them are for four people.
Oh, but okay. Like, so that's how you do the portion control, but without doing
there
portion
is,
control.
No, there is no portion. So there's no like only have this much of it.
It's,
so all what we encourage is actually listening to your body. Eat when you're hungry. Stop eating when you're full. There is that. It's not like the primary goal, but it's inside the app. So it's all about finding what time works best for you to eat and eating when you're hungry, stopping when you're full. And like, as I said, what we're finding both in our members and in our RCTs and our trial is that people are less hungry when they eat the food that we are recommending, because we recommend whole food and lots of fiber. And we know that whole foods and lots of fiber help our guts to release satiety hormones. So GLP-1, which is what Ozempic is basically made of, right, is a peptide we make in the gut. Our body already makes that for us when we're full. And eating a diet that's rich in whole foods, high in fiber, that has lots of plant protein in it too, that stimulates the release of these hormones that help us to feel full. So what we're doing is sort of removing this need to count calories and portion control. None of that is fact. None of that happens in Zoe. Mm-hmm. And it's all about improving dietary quality, mm-hmm. eating foods that are really supportive of your health, and then learning to eat when you're hungry, stop when you're not, and move your body throughout the day. And those factors, that all helps our metabolic health. And it's much more sustainable in the long term. So actually what it is, Zoe membership is really for life, because every time we update the app continuously. Mm-hmm. There's more information, there's new things that you can learn. And it isn't about obsessively doing it for 6 weeks and then just leaving, mm-hmm. right? It's about learning what your pace is, learning what it is that you need support with. And then the app responds to what it is that you want more of or less of.
Is there a way of, so I have a client who doesn't, I only give her fitness program. She does Zoe Nutrition. Mm. So when she showed me her nutrition side of things, her protein intake wasn't as much as I would have programmed her. Is there a way of, do you have to follow it solidly, or could she introduce a bit more protein if that was going to be recommended for, depends on what your goal is, I suppose. But
it is. So it depends on your goals. And as I said, sort of our advice in the app is very evidence-based, and it supports people to get what they need from their food. So for example, if she were to log like a protein supplement, it would not score well because there is no evidence.
It's all synthetic. Yeah.
But if she were to increase like her nuts or her oily fish, then it would still improve her Zoe score.
Okay.
So there's space for people to then adopt things that they want to increase or decrease.
Yeah. Okay.
It's very much so. It's much more about like make sure you're keeping the quality really good, and that. Where if you are going to increase your protein, for example, absolutely, if that's that goal of yours, if that helps you, then great.
Yeah.
But we would be really focused on the quality of the protein.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So she could add an actual meat rather than, the protein shakes. Okay, cool. So talking about these, it's a thing in your arm, right?
The CGM.
Yeah. Because I see that I have people on runs all the time. They've always got them in their arms. And I'm like, how funny. It's literally everywhere, isn't it?
Yes.
How fast has it grown, just out of interest?
So it's growing really quickly. I think the US is ahead of us. So in the US, it's even more. I was recently in Dubai. It's everywhere there as well. So I think CGMs are a really brilliant way to get an indication of where you sit in your life, where you are in terms of your metabolic response to sugars, basically. Now, it's still early days, so it's still only just beginning to be more commonplace for people without diabetes to wear them. But I suspect, and it's not just me, I think it's pretty clear that it's going to be one of those metrics that are used to continue monitoring your health throughout life. So it's a bit like knowing what your blood pressure is, right? Knowing your blood pressure is really important, especially as you age, and understanding what your baseline blood pressure is incredibly helpful to know whether you're creeping up towards hypertension, which is a massive problem. Mm. With CGMs, you are able to have an insight to how your body is metabolically reacting to the foods that you're eating. How is your body handling sugars in a more descriptive way than just knowing your fasted levels can give you. So your fasted glucose levels, of course, are really important. Your HbA1c, so your average, is really important. But when that starts creeping up, something's already not going super well. Mm-hmm. So understanding what your daily fluctuations look like can be really helpful. Now, at Zoe, we only use the CGM for 2 weeks in the testing phase, because once we see your response to that initial test meal, the cookies, and we see what 2 weeks of life looks like for you, it's enough data to be able to say, okay, this is where you are right now in terms of metabolic response to sugars. And we don't necessarily need people to keep checking their blood sugar levels all the time.
Yeah.
Because there is then a risk of only isolating the blood sugar as the only metric.
Right.
Whereas the blood fats are just as important. Otherwise, it's that classic example of otherwise everyone could just eat sticks of butter and it wouldn't change your blood sugar levels.
Yeah.
But actually, there's other factors to take into account. But I certainly see a world in which, just having a CGM on for a couple of weeks once a year can give you a really nice insight to what's happening with your day-to-day life, because daily life really impacts your blood glucose, as it should. So if you're more stressed, your glucose levels will be higher. If you've had less sleep, your response is different. So many things impact it that it's just a good idea to keep an eye on it, as you would blood pressure or as you would your cholesterol levels. Just knowing where you are on that spectrum is very helpful.
Do you think that the NHS will start to use it in their practices?
So the NHS is super strapped for cash, and more generally speaking, if you look at public health, it is not yet set up for prevention as much as we'd like it to be. And using CGM in people without diabetes is certainly on the prevention scale. So it's like something you do as preventative medicine. The NHS unfortunately does not have the resources to be operating on that scale at the moment.
Okay.
I would love, my background is in public health, I would love to see a world in which the NHS is able to work more upstream in preventing these metabolic conditions that are, you know, massively increasing. But at the moment, I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Are the resources that are used for the Zoe stuff, are they coming from the NHS? Are they taken away from?
No, so we use it for research. So when you sign up for Zoe, you can opt in to take part in Predict 3, which is our trial that's ongoing with all of our members. So when often people say, also ask sort of what happens to my health data, well, it all goes towards research. We publish papers that help to move forward our understanding of how nutrition impacts lots of things. So the CGMs that we have are actually part of a research program where to try and understand how does CGM use in people without diabetes, how can we use that to drive forward better health?
Okay. And your top tips then?
My top tips?
As just a nutritionist, not just as the Zoe head nutritionist.
Yeah.
What would be your main pieces of advice for improving your eating habits?
Yeah. Okay, great. I love this question. So I think always start with something that you're able to change. So I often say that for most people, it's either breakfast, because you're likely to prepare it at home. Doesn't necessarily mean you eat it at home, but you can prepare it at home, or you have it at home. So that you have more control into what goes into it. And actually starting with a really great breakfast that's lots of whole foods, high in fiber, has delicious like plant protein or eggs, some sort of great protein to set you up for the day. That is such a good way to start the day off well and to actually have ticked lots of boxes to start with. So whether that is like packing some overnight oats with berries and kefir and nuts and seeds and just making this to take with you, or it is having like a delicious eggs, avocado, spinach, mushroom, whatever ticks, floats your boat, breakfast wise, there's so many options. That's one of the things. And if you're not that person, then snacks. So about 25% of our calories every day come from snacks. So if we can improve the quality of the snacks we're eating, then we're improving quite a big proportion of our daily intake. So again, that's about prep. It's about knowing, okay, I'm going to be out all day today. So what can I bring with me? Is it whole fruit? Is it mixed nuts? Is it a couple of boiled eggs? What can I bring with me that's going to be really healthy? I actually also, sometimes I put hummus in a jar, like an old jar, put some crudité in there and then shut it and just take it with me. And then you've got like hummus on the go.
Oh yeah, that's good.
So just
that's
snacking. A good tip. And then really, we live in a world now where so much of our food is ultra processed food.
Yeah, cut so that stuff out.
Just as much as you can. It's impossible to get to 0%. It's like, it's not impossible, but it's like super hard work.
Yeah.
So where you can, be your own health architect, right? What are you bringing into your home? Can you reduce the amount of ultra processed foods that you're actually purchasing to have in your home? Once you start reducing the number in your household, then you are reducing the overall intake that you have.
I absolutely love that. Be your own health architect. That is the quote of the day. Thank you so much, my love. It was so insightful. I think I would like to try Zoe.
Oh, I would love for you to try Zoe.
Yes, please. I would love that.
Send me an email and I'll set you up. I'd love to know what you think.
I will. Thank you so much. It was great having you on.
Thank you.
Amazing, guys. What a conversation that was. I would love to know if you lot have tried Zoe as well and what the impact it had on your life. Let us know, drop us a message, and I will let our lovely Federica know as well. I've only got time for one question today, but it's good. It's a good one. My fitness watch. So someone said to me, what do you think about fitness watches? Would you recommend them? And listen, it's kind of like what we just said about tracking apps and stuff. Obviously, if you become obsessed with like getting your steps in, like your watch becomes the be-all and end-all of everything in your life, then I wouldn't recommend getting one. But if you can try and have a bit of a good relationship with it, then they are amazing for a lot of things. I love my watch as it's a great way to keep me accountable. It monitors my steps and my NEAT, which is the exercise that you do outside of your workouts, and obviously your active calories in your workouts too. It's not going to be 100% accurate at all times, but it does give you a good indication of where you are. It also helps me in my workouts, as it helps me track my rest periods. And it's also good for running because you can see what pace you're running at. So yeah, I would recommend getting a watch. I have an Apple Watch. I haven't tried any others. But if you can, get one. And then it will elevate your fitness levels, I believe. So guys, thank you so much for joining us for yet another amazing show today. Same time again next week. Make sure you drop your listener questions over to What The Health Show on Instagram. And if you've missed any shows, catch us on all good podcast platforms. And until next week, I'll see you then. Have a great one.